My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball.
Welcome you into the 18th episode of Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat. That's Dan Buffa of St. Louis Sports Minute. We're talking, it's our second show of the off season, but the first one that really counts. Last week, of course, we were focused much on the NLDS and that loss. Now we know that the world is not going to end because the Cubs have lost to the Mets. I don't think anybody was too broken up about that. And as you were saying, Dan, it was pretty nice to see a Daniel do so much damage.
He did. The guy slugged, he hit .529. He had a lot of home runs. He broke a record for consecutive home runs in postseason games. And it's just one of those guys that, just like David Freese, he comes out of nowhere and has a great series. Daniel Murphy's he's been a great player for many years, one of those under-the-radar guys. But here he is, he just has an unbelievable series. And, he's one of those guys that you couldn't feel happier for because he's played in the league for about 6 or 7 years, and he hasn't gotten, a big contract or a lot of notoriety. But it was just good to see him go and really turn this Mets lineup, which really, again, revolves on, on Cespedes. They just got David Wright back and Granderson, but he really gave them something else. So the Cubs, and really no pitcher, I don't think, in this postseason has really been able to figure out. This guy, he actually got a home run off Clayton Kershaw in the first round. So it's just one of those guys that it's swinging a great bat, and I think that no matter who makes it out of the AL, if it's going to be the Royals or Blue Jays, I think Daniel Murphy is going to have a great postseason. It's one of those things that's going to score him a big contract that I think may even pull him out of New York, but it was definitely good to see kind of a under-the-radar player take the Cubs down.
Yeah, and anytime we have those kind of guys, I always go back to those 90s Braves teams with Mark Lemke. It seemed like Lemke would do nothing during the regular season, and then he would just be outstanding, not necessarily for home runs or anything, but for doubles and triples and big hits and stuff like that.
Seems just
like
big hits. Remy thought, okay, this guy's going to have an over 4.9. They couldn't pitch to him. And this guy, they pitched him inside, and he'll take it to right field. They pitched him down away, and he'll just crank it to center. He hit everybody. It is not like one pitcher that can really shut him down. And, maybe if the Blue Jays get there and David Price, even though Mr. Price has not suffered a very favorable postseason fate, I don't see anybody on their staff really being able to shut him down. And then even you get Murphy, you have to deal with Cespedes and Wright, and they have a guy who hit 40 home runs before leading off Farman Granderson. That's a lineup that really, I kind of made a mistake of not really even thinking about the Mets most of the year, just because, I know they're playing great. I know they're overtaking the Nationals, and they're ahead of division. But for some reason, when you're playing with two other 90-win teams in your own division, you don't really look at those other teams and, as they're beating up on the Dodgers and they started to beat up on the Cubs, this team actually has a good roster even before they got Cespedes. And then when they got him, it's like they just supersized their talent. So, and then you get the kind of performance from Murphy, which I don't think anybody can have said. You would have thought on October 3rd, okay, who's going to be the biggest player in this playoffs? You would have never thought that Daniel Murphy would be the top, top spot or top two spots.
Now, looking at, I always was concerned about the Mets and the Dodgers also, even though they didn't win as many because...
You're better than me, man.
I worried about them because they have great pitching staffs. And in short series, great pitching staffs are so dominant and so effective. I mean, it's mind-boggling, really, that the Dodgers haven't gone farther when they've had Kershaw and Greinke. Now, granted, Kershaw's had his issues and somewhat Cardinal-related, not always because the Mets got to him, too, but... still, when you're looking at how you're going to, if you start looking at lineups and you look at postseason matchups, I always look at the starting pitching staffs. And, that's, I remember in 2006 not being as surprised as maybe some with the Cardinals, because I thought the way that the Cardinals matched up with who they were going to see worked out well for them, you know, at least to get to the World Series.
Yeah.
So, and ever since then, you just look at that. And the Mets had, you know, four very solid starters. You know, they get to add Zach Wheeler into that mix next year. Now, you know, Cespedes will be gone. The offense will be different. You know, and some of their late season surge is probably helped by the fact that the Nationals fell apart. But they're a very good team. And, yeah, it's going to be a
battle. Yeah. It's going to be a battle because those guys, they have pitching that makes what the Dodgers have seem kind of like, you know, ordinary. I mean, especially if the Dodgers lose Greinke, which him opting out of the rest of that $71 million will probably be pointing to. And, these guys are young. I mean, but I also made a mention of this. You know, if the Cardinals have a completely healthy Wainwright and Martinez, it's a different story.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People will go, oh, the Mets would have rolled over us. And maybe that's true. But I think if you have a very healthy Adam Wainwright, you know, anchor in your rotation, and then, you know, Waka and Martinez can be allowed to be, as my cohort on the radio show last week, Matt Wintner, said, he said, you know, they can allow to be kids and not have to be aces, and they can just be guys that contribute. And that changes everything. I really think the Cardinals, and for most of the teams in that division in the Central, because they're fighting so hard to get to the end, and they're using all their pitchers and using up their bullpens, and the Cardinals were reeling on fumes with their injuries. I just think that the three teams kind of ran out of gas. Now, of course, that's not fair to the Pirates because they played one game because of the wild card structure, because of the crowded division of the Central. But it just, in a way, you know, the Mets just kind of they had it all going at the right time on offense, and their pitching was just unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. If this team, if the Cardinals were fully healthy, yeah, that might have been. But the way that the Cardinals were at this state of the game, even if they could have somehow gotten past Chicago, it would have been very difficult to imagine them passing the Mets. The Mets, you know, you would have had to hope for Adam Wainwright to be able to go five innings and some starts.
You could have almost like been asking for, I mean, the same kind of miracle we got back in 2006, because even in that series, everybody thought we were going to lose like in four games.
Yeah.
The fact that we rolled past the Padres and they're like, okay, there's no way they're getting past the Mets, and there we take them to seven games, and Mr. Wainwright drops a hook and it's all over. But yeah. I do think that the Mets are going to be legit contenders, and for the Washington Nationals who are seen to be in, like, you know, in crumbling by the end of the season, I mean, that whole division is going to change.
That's true. And I mean, a lot of things are going to change this offseason, and that'll kind of help us transition over to the Cardinals somewhat, but a lot of teams are going to be changing and shaking some things up, and the Cardinals may be one of those teams. For the fact that they won 100 games, you know, I was listening to Derek Gould and Benjamin Hockman on their best podcast in baseball, which I'm kind of sad that they had to go back to that name. You know, we kind of took our name in part, not entirely, but in part because of that old podcast that Derek and Bernie Mikulas did.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was kind of, you know, it kind of looks like we were copying them. We weren't, but, you know, they had to go back. They were doing it as so often happens. They had to go back to best podcast in baseball. Let me try to say that three times fast. just to get it back on iTunes, I think, and stuff like that. But anyway, I was listening to them today, and they were talking about, I think it was Derek really that pointed out that, you know, the last 3 years, this offense has not been good, but it's been masked by, you know, in 2013, it was masked by the fact they had all that runners in scoring position. You know,
yeah.
Craziness. I mean, that was just amazing that they did there. Last year, it was a really very, very good record with one-run games. This year, you've got a pitching staff that, you know, was almost historic levels. I mean, really much. You know, on one side of things, you think, wow, if the Cardinals could ever get an offense, they might just tear up the league. But on the other side of things is if they don't get an offense, some of that stuff's not going to be there anymore. I mean, you can't count on this kind of stuff happening. So when they get into this offseason, is this going to be a time, I know Mo's talking about maybe a little bit of a shakeup, but what can they do? What, you know, where do they go to make this team a better offensive team?
It's really hard. I mean, I looked at the last 2 weeks just trying to think, okay, so if you want to make a change, let's say you want to get Hayward, that's one thing. You got Hayward, but then you really have Grichuk in center. You have Matt Holliday, who has the last year of his contract before an option year for 2017, and he's not going anywhere. And even if the Cardinals wanted to put him somewhere, he has a no trade clause. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be there, and for all of them that are still dreaming, he's not going to play first base. So really, you have third base, you have Carp, you have Peralta, two more years of Peralta. I mean, I guess what they really, if they, you know, I mean, I guess they, would you think they can maybe shop Peralta and his money? I guess I know his contract declined in salary mm-hmm. as it finished up. So maybe if you wanted to, because the way Peralta's kind of declined, his some of his power stats went down. I mean, if you want to do a shakeup and maybe look for a different shortstop that can hit, I know Tulo went to Toronto and you're not going to be getting him. It's one of those things you got to be creative. You can get a better backup catcher, but what does that really mean? If Yadier is healthy, he's going to play a lot. Colton Wong's your second baseman. A small part of me thinks that they really wanted to be gutsy, that they would package him in and put Carpenter back at second and find a third baseman. But Colton Wong is so under control, I'm not sure they'd do that. First base is a big deal. If you bring back Hayward, you have Piscotty and Adams and maybe Brandon Moss if they figure out an arbitration deal. It's one of those things where, you know, I look at it, I just don't know where they're going to make a change unless they did a shakeup, unless they tried to package or trade Peralta, pull out a Mad Hat and trade Wong just because they want to increase their power. Maybe they find a power hitting third baseman and they move Carpenter to second base. I can't see him trading Grichuk or Piscotty just because they're young, they're under control as far as just team control, as far as having to pay these guys. You're going to be having to pay Rosenthal soon. It's just one of those things where Mo's going to have to be really creative. Now, if they don't get Hayward for some reason, then that kind of opens things up a little bit. Then you can maybe look at a guy like Cespedes or a big bat like that. Justin Upton's also going to be a free agent. It really, as I said in the article last week, I think I put it on STL Sportsman and KSD guy. I said it really all hinges on what happens with Hayward. Because if you sign him, I mean, it doesn't mean you don't have any money, but it just means your positions are getting full. And it's going to be really creative for Mo to do something outside of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of us expect a return for Jason Hayward, and I think most of us want a return for Jason Hayward. So you're right. You get Hayward, you've got Grichuk out there, you've got Holiday out there, you've got Piscotty at first base, you've got Carpenter at either second or third, and, you know, that really does limit what you can do for this offense. And you look at Peralta, I mean, Peralta had an amazing first half. I mean, he hit almost 300. He had 16.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
13 home runs, something like that. I mean, he just wore down. I mean, you can make the argument he just wore down, and maybe he's, you know, getting older and all that kind of stuff, too. You hope that a better backup, more rest, and he would be able to stretch that out a little bit better throughout the whole year. But, you know, that's a gamble. Right now, it does seem like without a major, major move, which may be a Wong, which may be a Grichuk. I mean, who knows? Maybe a
Wong Adams kind of package deal. I mean, they re-sign a guy like Moss and Borges and package him into a deal. It just makes you. I mean, he's gonna have to be really creative. I mean, it wasn't like Johnny Peralta was bad. He had 17 home runs, 71 RBIs, 745 OPS. It's just his drastic splits were just what I was worried about. And, you know, it's something like it with Adams, the way Adams is kind of his power has been on decline since the middle of 2014. So, yeah, they're going to have to get creative.
Yeah, I mean, it may even be, you know, exercising Jaime Garcia's option and putting him in there. But it seems to me, really, if you look at it, the only real place that they can do a significant power upgrade would be first base.
Yeah.
Because even if you traded Peralta, you're not going to find a shortstop that's going to hit, you know, more than 15 home runs probably anyway. You're not going to make much change there.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to do a whole lot with Wong. I think that first base is the only real place they've got if they're going to do something besides hope that people can be a little bit better. And being that they're not changing hitting coaches, which is it's kind of a sore spot for some people, you can't necessarily expect that there's going to be a significant change in approach. You wouldn't think so, unless Mabry starts teaching things differently. you know, I mean, that's his philosophy's there, and whether it's good or not, and whether it is effective, is always up for debate, and depends on how much you believe in hitting coaches and what they do. But, you know, first base seems the only place to be, and I don't know what that means. I mean, you know, hey, Can you put three or four pieces together and get a Paul Goldschmidt? Yeah, probably not, but hey, why not dream? The Cardinals have said that they will probably significantly up the payroll with given the money that's coming in, especially in Fox Sports in the West in a couple of years. That may be not surprising. It's something we've not necessarily heard Bill DeWitt say before. A lot of times payroll increases have kind of gotten eaten up by raises to the people that are there or maybe one move. Do you think that it's possible that they'd see them, you know, raise it enough to get two free agents or a big trade?
I do, and I think if they can't figure out the offensive part of it, they're just going to get more pitching. I can really see them, for some reason, I can see them doing the Jaime, you know, take up his option and then kind of shop him. Maybe you shop Jaime and Matt Adams somewhere and get a good, maybe you get a good middle infielder to help out Wong and Peralta, but they don't get run into the ground. Maybe you get some bullpen help. Maybe you get some kind of backup, and then maybe you go out there and you get a guy like maybe Jordan Zimmermann, a guy who can he's not an ace. He isn't going to cost you ace money, but he can be a great number two. And then all of a sudden, your young guys get slid into four and five, where they don't have to be aces. And you got Lance Lynn as your third, making $7 million. Waino is your ace. I mean, because I think the Cardinals, you know, if they don't see a way to make room for offense, they're just going to load up on pitching. It's just what the Cardinals do. And I can see that when they add the payroll, I mean, that's not even really – I mean, you know, I'm not even really attaching that to the Hayward signing because of the way that his contract's going to roll on at least. It's going to be at least a 6 or 7, 8 million, 8-year deal. But I see them raising the payroll being a possible grabbing of a starting pitcher. And it could happen with a trade, or it could just happen with grabbing somebody in free agency. But I think – I mean, as hard as it's going to be to find a fit – and yes, Mr. Goldschmidt would be wonderful. He could bat him fourth and finally have a legit cleanup hitter. But and when we come back down to earth, even though there's a lot of dreamy scenarios, but I do see the adding of the payroll, the addition there. I can see that being possibly for another starting pitcher and more of a higher end than a lower end starting pitcher.
Yeah, my gut feeling is if they do that, you know, David Price has to be in that conversation. I've been a guy that I've really liked to see David Price in St. Louis a number of times. I think there's been some times where they've had a chance to – would have had some chances to trade for him, at least in my opinion. And
he actually likes St. Louis too. I think he made – there was a mention somewhere that he said he'd love to come pitch here.
Bob Nightingale was on with Bernie on his show, and there is a he kind of dropped it in passing that Price would be almost desperate to come here now. That is also second or third hand or at least knowledge, and I don't know that desperate to come here means I'm going to take significantly below market value. But, you know, it could be. I mean, it could be a guy that says, look, this is a good situation. I mean, we saw, and you know, my feeling is still that Jason Hayward signs with the Cardinals and probably for less than he could get somewhere else. Not a lot less. Not a lot less. I'm not saying that he's going to, you know, have to take a second job or anything, but... He's probably could get more from Chicago,
definitely
from New York, from Yankees, yeah, someplace like that. And I don't think he's going to. Chicago does worry me a little bit because that's a situation where I think he could be comfortable. But
yeah,
I still don't think he would want to go that way. So I still feel pretty confident that he'll go in there. But if he goes for a little bit less and David Price goes for a little bit less. Boy, you know, I love pitching, and to have an Adam Wainwright, Carlos Martinez, David Price, Michael
Lynn,
Walker,
and you have Lance Lynn's your number five.
Yeah, Lance Lynn's your number five. Or you keep Garcia and trade Lynn, which is less likely. I think if you're going to trade anybody, you trade Garcia.
You know, it's still a possibility. You know, we talked about it too last week. I mean, Lance Lynn, Matt Adams, those are two guys that I just kind of see floating around. Now, I mean, I'm a Lance Lynn fan, and it's not like I want the guy to go. But you do kind of start to think, okay, if they were going to get creative and move some pieces around, Matt Adams and Lance Lynn, Matt Adams in his control, in at least arbitration years, and Lance Lynn's got a nice, comfy two years left on his deal at a very cheap, you know, $14 million. So, but yeah, I mean, David Price is a guy that, you know, I'm looking at his stats right now. He's been very durable for the past 5-6 years. He strikes out a lot of guys. He's a guy that can give you a lot of innings. he's pitched on, you know, he played with the Rays seemingly for most of his career until he went to the, you know, he went to Detroit, you know, and then he went to Toronto. He, you know, he maybe coming to Busch Stadium, he might be a guy that really just falls in love with Busch Stadium. I mean, if John Lackey can find that kind of wonderful numbers at his age in his career, you got to think a guy like David Price with the stuff he has, pitching in a pitcher's ballpark and not in Toronto, where the ball just kind of flies out. It's one of those things where it could be a great thing. I mean, it's just I do think about David Price. I think about David Price, and then they don't want to do that. You know, Zimmerman, Samardzija, those kind of guys, the number twos kind of come into mind. But David Price, you know, that could be the kind of thing that Modis goes, look, if we can't make room for offense, if we're just going to re-sign Hayward and hope that we get, you know, a full year of Grichuk could be 30 home runs. A full year of Piscotty could be 20 to 25 home runs. Hayward's going to be your everything guy. Maybe Holiday gets back to what he did, you know, a year or two ago. I mean, if there's no room for offense, because, you know, the next offseason, then that's where the offense gets a little tricky, because then you have, you know, 1 year left on Peralta. You have Molina's contract coming to an end. You got Holiday's option year before. But right now, being that it's so hard to make a move on the offense unless you want to move a big piece, I think adding another pitcher, I mean, go with your philosophy. More pitching is better. As we saw in the postseason, I mean, the Mets hit a lot, but it was really their pitching that just zapped the very hot Cubs bats.
Yeah, I mean, pitching seems to be, not always, but it does seem to be
the equalizer,
a huge thing in the postseason. Now, again, David Price, the postseason is not helping him with any money. Although, you know, again, he had a pretty decent start going for the Blue Jays last time, and then, you know, I think he had like five scoreless innings and it blew into six or something.
Yeah. I think it was actually into the seventh. I think he was blazing through their order, and then the outfielder missed a ball, it dropped in, and all of a sudden, as the postseason goes, everything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Well, especially against a team like Kansas City. Now, he struggled against, he struggled against Texas in that series, but, you know, if he comes out tomorrow and pitches a gem and Toronto can go to game seven, I mean, that's going to be huge for him, and, you know, it's not unheard of. Unfortunately, as Cardinal fans, we know that 3-1 leads are not nearly as secure as we'd like them to be.
They are not.
I think the Cardinals have lost more 3-1 leads than any other team.
I think before this year, I thought it was 3 years in a row we've had those kind of leads. It was the Red Sox, it was 2-1. And then they came back and beat us. And then the Giants, I thought it was maybe 3-1.
It was 1-1, and then we lost the last 3 years, we've lost three in a row to end the year. But we've lost, you know, 85, we were up 3-1 on the Royals. 96, we were up 3-1 on the Braves.
Oh, gosh.
2012, we were up 3-1 on the Giants. I feel like there might be another one, too, that I'm not thinking of right now. But
yeah, I'm trying to think of it. I know we ran into the Curt Schilling buzzsaw in one of those years in Arizona.
Well, that was in the NLD. That was in the NLDS. We lost in five.
And the Giants got us in 2002.
Yeah, that was a six-game series. I don't think we weren't up. They weren't up for that one. I think those were the only three.
Yeah, I think those are it.
They were up 3-1. Maybe one of the older ones. Maybe 68. I don't know for sure. But anyway, there's only been like 12 teams that have lost 3-1 leads, and the Cardinals have like three of them. So, but still, getting back to Price, you know, if he pitches a good game there, if they can move it back to the World Series, if he can pitch a game or two against the Mets that are good, you know, he raises that price back up. So it's going to be – and he's going to get paid no matter. So it's going to be whether he wants to play in St. Louis. And he's never played in the National League.
He's
had a very good run in the American League, which is supposedly harder for pitchers. I mean, he went 9-1 with a 2.3 ERA after getting traded to Toronto.
And he's 30 years old. He's not too old.
Right. I mean, you could give him a 5-6 year deal. You could give him a 7 year deal. I mean, 7 year deal for pitcher, it kind of makes you cringe a little bit. But he is 30. He's never had any serious arm problems. Of course, you signed him to a 7 year deal, and it's probably going to have some arm problems in there somewhere. Boy, that's just the way it goes. But it seems unlikely that you could get him for five, and maybe you could. Maybe him five for a couple option years. I don't know. I'm terrible with contracts. But I feel like, you know, a Price and a Hayward, and maybe some sort of decent first baseman. It doesn't have to be an outstanding first baseman, but maybe you can trade Garcia and Adams and get some sort of 20 home run, 25 home run first baseman that hits 260 or whatever, and which is kind of what Brandon Moss is supposed to be. So
supposed to be.
And maybe you trade it around and let him play all of that. I mean, if he plays a full year in St. Louis, could you see a better Brandon Moss? I don't know. I mean, we saw him play pretty well down the stretch at times, you know, but it's difficult coming off the bench if that's his regular job. You know, he's definitely got the power. He's got 25, 30 home run power. He might hit 260 and strike out a whole lot of times. But, you know, we've had Matt Adams and we've had Mark Reynolds. I mean, we're used to the striking out a whole bunch of times. So, but it is difficult with all these pieces unless you see something, you know, just mind-boggling like they trade Matt Carpenter or something. It's difficult to see how they can do a huge shakeup offensively. And so they might need to do that. They may need to go out and get a David Price.
Yeah. And there's also, you know, Brandon Moss has been kind of recovering from surgery. I mean, this is a guy who may not have been completely his healthy self this year. Just, you know, 2 years ago, the guy hit 30 home runs for the Oakland Athletics. You know, he had an 859 OPS. I mean, he was a good player. It could just be that he never got his I think it was his hip he had surgery on. And I know he had some surgery. It could be that maybe he just needs the offseason to get healthy. And if he seems to be a guy that since the Cardinals don't have a real way to make a big move, they bring him back. And he could be a guy that could float around the outfield, fill in when needed. He could play some first base. He can give you some pop off the bench. I know he had a very big hit against the Cubs that almost was a two-run single, but Tony Cruz got thrown out. But he had a big hit there. He had some big hits down the stretch. He's a guy that, I mean, it's just in recent memory, he's gotten, you know, he's hit for a lot of power. Maybe he just kind of ran out of gas. Maybe he wasn't completely healthy. One of those things where you're not really like disabled, this hurt, but you're just not right. Maybe the offseason gives him a chance to get healthy. The Cardinals can sign him to a nice, you know, 1 year arbitration kind of deal and see if he can get his legs back under him and get a good, the guy will be wanting to have a great year to get that long-term deal. I mean, he's 32 years old, so for him, he's thinking, you know, if I can do really good this year, I can get myself one last 2 or 3 year deal with the team. So he's got a lot of motivation. So if that is what they have to do and bring him back, I mean, that works. That makes sense.
Of course, we've been talking about this, like getting somebody at first base, but really, we're still looking at Piscotty there. I mean,
yeah.
And I kind of forget that unless there's more injuries and Piscotty winds up in the outfield or winds up to be that fourth outfielder. Maybe you go get a first baseman and let Piscotty just be a fourth outfielder that plays almost every day just in different positions. Because Matt Holliday's going to need time off. There's going to probably be times where, you know, Grichuk is going to be going through a spurt. You don't want to run out Hayward. I mean, you know, he's not going to play every day, I guess, with those guys out there, but he could play a lot. Play some first base, give him a little bit of flexibility. But, you know, again, you kind of get that this, you know, glut of people that are quality people, but they may not be, you know, you put them all together and you may not have that, you know, upper echelon guy, but it makes it difficult to say, well, let's, you know, here's our weak spot, let's get rid of this guy. Well, don't really have anybody like that. There's not anybody there that we just say, oh, this is our black hole. It's not like John Jay's still out there at center field. You say, okay, we go get into the center fielder. You know, everybody that's in this lineup, when you look at it, has the potential to be very strong, but they're just not clicking.
Yeah, I mean, it's also just the way the Cardinals have drafted. They haven't really drafted any big boppers. Maybe that's what Mo was mentioning when he was – they're going to get more in the Cuban market of players, Dominican Republic, try to really look out and try to look for a Jorge Soler, look for guys that are more power instead of guys like – for most of their careers, like Carpenter and Wong and Piscotty, guys who really hit for a lot of doubles and average, some pop in there a little bit. But maybe the Cardinals are – I mean, you have these guys that you've drafted and groomed, and, you know, you're kind of stuck with this lineup. But they're and stuck in being – it's not a bad lineup. You just need – for one, you need health. You need some better depth in the middle infield. But, yeah, I can see Piscotty being a guy that just, you know, runs all over the place. He plays first. I mean, gosh, the guy played third base in college. Maybe getting some reps there. And, you know, if something happens to Wong, you move Carpenter to second. You know, you can get creative with these guys. You know, Randall Grichuk doesn't have to play every day. If he gets into a swoon, you can rest him. But then again, you have he's one of your guys that can be a legit 30 home run guy. He would have been if he wouldn't have gotten hurt today the way he was swinging the bat. So maybe, you know, maybe he has a big breakout year. Maybe Piscotty and Grichuk become your MVPs and the other guys kind of start to transition back into maybe, you know, future part-time players. It just depends on how they want to do it and what kind of splash they make or they don't make this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to have to be some things that, Mo is going to have to do. And it's, you know, as somebody, as it was pointed out in some of these articles, you know, Mo is used to being done before Thanksgiving. I mean, a lot of the last couple of years, he's made his moves early. He's gotten ahead of the market, perhaps, sometimes. And, you know, he'll pick up a piece or two here and there. But for the most part, he's done by the end of, before Thanksgiving, definitely. And it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case this year. It seems unlikely that that Hayward's going to sign before the winter meetings in the beginning of December. You know, if there's trades to be worked on. Now, that weekend, wherever they're meeting this year, I don't know. Sometimes it's Nashville. Sometimes it's other places. I'm not sure where they're meeting this year. But that week of the general manager's meeting could be busy for Mo. I mean, he could be doing some dealing that we haven't seen him do. And, you know, to be honest, as much as we usually use the MO We Trust logo, his trade record as of late is a little bit spottier than we'd like it to be.
It is. I mean, people really expected more. The offense had kind of sputtered. You know, they're dealing with injuries this year when July 31st came around. And even I was kind of thinking, you know, I mean, when they started mentioning Cleveland, I didn't think Brandon Moss. But okay, they're going to get somebody else and Brandon Moss. And when it was just him and the kind of swoon he was kind of in, even though he had the 15 home runs, it's just one of those things where I think people expected more this year. They knew the division they were in. They knew how competitive it was. They knew the Cubs were just bringing up slugger after slugger. And, you know, the Cardinals saw that up close in their eventual demise later on in the postseason. It's one of those things where I think the Cardinals, I mean, the fans just kind of wanted a little bit more. And when Rob Kaminsky probably wasn't going to be able to pitch here for a couple of years, but still, when you give up a prize prospect who's, you know, high ranked among baseball as far as pitching prospects go, it was just kind of a head scratcher. And, you know, it's one of those things where you look at, okay, was that a good trade? I mean, we all know Mo has made some great trades. I mean, one of the most notable being, you know, John Lackey last year. You know, he got John Lackey for a couple guys that are struggling to get back to where they were, and Joe Kelly and Alan Craig. You know, the Matt Holliday deal always kind of rings out for me as being one of those big deals. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think fans really expected something more this year because they knew the kind of pitching they were getting in, and they knew the kind of division they were in. And I think this year was a misfire. Even though Brandon Moss played okay down the stretch, he kind of regained his bat a little bit. It's one of those things where you do say, okay, that trade, it wasn't a complete failure, but it was kind of a disappointment. And that kind of describes Mozeliak's moves, yeah, here and there, more often these days than not. You know, I mean, now people are going to point out the Lackey trade, which, I mean, it's a great one, but there's been some head scratchers.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, I guess he seems to be pretty good at the big trades. I mean, you know, Jason Hayward trade was very good, even though, you know, it worked out pretty well for Atlanta as well. If Walden hadn't been hurt, it would have even been more one-sided for St. Louis, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Blackie trade, when you made the big deal there. So I guess if you're gonna whiff on them, they need to be on the whiffs of the C-Shicks and the Broxtons and those kind of lower-level ones. You know, Kaminsky, we've talked about it before. You know, Kaminsky's probably 3-4 years away from helping the team, and, you know, there's no guarantee that he's ever going to help this team. You know, it would have helped this Cardinal team that's got so many pitchers in it. So it was a bit of a high price to pay, and maybe you could have gotten more for him, but I don't think that just burns the Cardinals to the ground. It's not like he traded Alex Reyes for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's a little spotty, but, you know, when Mo's got the time to make the moves, he pretty much knows what the team needs, and he seems to be able to,
oh, yeah,
to target it pretty well. Now, like I say, if Brandon Moss doesn't re-sign, you know, he's going to have all three of those guys that he made a deal for are going to be gone. And that's, you know, granted, those were supposed to be short-term deals anyway, but you'd like to see somebody stick around or at least be where you'd want them to stick around.
Yeah, I think if Hayward stays and, you know, Walden's going to be back, I think that's a win for the Cardinals. I think the Braves got a good deal in it as well, and Miller and Jenkins. But, I mean, of course, if Hayward signs, it's a great deal. And now if he leaves, and then, you know, Brandon Moss doesn't come back, and, you know, we're looking at a couple kind of rough trades. I mean, yeah, Hayward was great this year, but, you know, Miller's going to pitch in Atlanta for a long time. He obviously, I mean, minus a lot of run support, unfortunately, he pitched very well there. But yeah, I mean, and really, I expect Jason Hayward to sign. I mean, when I say that maybe he not, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate to myself and the fact that, you know, if he doesn't re-sign, it's not the end of the world. But I do think that they're going to come to some kind of agreement. I think I'm more aligning with what you're thinking is that it's going to come not in November, but maybe December, when everything kind of when all the let's say ducks kind of line up and everything's kind of in place and the winter meetings have happened. And. And really, you know, if you you re-sign Hayward, it's a great trade. I mean, Hayward's is a guy that, you know, had a 6.0 WAR this last year. He's had two really good years when it comes to wins above replacement and all-around value 2 years in a row now, and he's still only 26 years old. You're getting him in the prime of his career, and you know, he's also got a little bit of a veteran thing to him. He's been around for six seasons, but I think if you sign Hayward, I mean, I think. Mo, if he can sign him and pull off some kind of trade, I mean, I don't see a lot on offense, but if he can bring in a top-line starter, people are going to forget about the Brandon Moss trade really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be – I mean, Mo can – yeah, nobody's going to worry about it if he signs Hayward and brings in Price, and, you know, we probably aren't going to worry too much about what he's done. It would be nice.
And you may see Moss right in the field with him, so then we have all the guys back.
Yep, that's true. Sorry, I bumped my mic and I was trying to make sure it didn't go off. I don't want to do that again. Let's see. So the Cardinals, I think we can't do much more with the roster till the World Series is over. But we've seen Alex Reyes is pitching out in Arizona in the Fall League. Seems to be doing well. Has really been. Been exciting out there. First outing, he went 3 2/3, just allowed a hit and a couple of walks. He's ranked 16th in the top 100 prospects. A guy like that can rise quickly. He could be in St. Louis by the middle of the year next year, and which also gets mixed into that equation of when we're talking about the pitching staff.
Yes, I mean, Alex Reyes is kind of like that next guy. He's kind of like the Waka, the Martinez. He's the guy that's going to be on the dock, kind of waiting for an injury, waiting for an opening. He could be a guy that comes up and helps the bullpen, you know, comes up there and blazes in the seventh or eighth inning. But he's one of those guys that he's very young, but as the Cardinals have shown, I mean, they have 22-year-olds, 23, 24-year-olds come up to help them and make a big impact. So I don't really look at his age. I just think when it comes to need – and I know he's probably going to start the year in Memphis, and he's going to, you know, if he does well there and the Cardinals have a need in May or June, I mean, I think we're definitely going to see him this year, at least if healthy, of course, by September. I think he's going to be one of those guys that shows off. At the very least, I mean, he's going to pitch as a Cardinal in 2016, but I do think that for some reason, with the way this team's history is with injuries, he could be a guy that could be starting a game in the second half of the season. He could be a guy that can come in and, you know, be a late inning guy. I mean, this is a very big weapon. The Cardinals, I mean, this guy doesn't have a no trade. I mean, he has a don't even think about asking about a trade sign on his head. So he's a very big asset, and an asset that I think we're going to see at some point in 2016. As far as the how much we're going to see him, it just depends on need. But as we know with the Cardinals, the need may be there before we know it.
Yeah, I mean, even if they go out and sign somebody like Price, you know that the injury bug is going to hit at some point in time, and that's having a guy like that as a possible option, especially in the second half of the year, is going to be big. And it's nice to have that. I mean, we've kind of tapped a lot of that talent in the minor leagues. No, there's still some down there, but a lot of the big names, a lot of the ones that we've been wanting to see are up or have been up. So it's nice to have a guy like that that's everybody's still high on. And you know, an electric pitcher is always a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, always enjoy that. So, you know, other than that, you know, I feel we got to keep talking because we've only done this for about 40 minutes now, and that's that confused some people, I think, if we did. But
last season, I think we almost went an hour more than this mark. I think we almost went 135, 140.
Yeah. But you know, it's off season, and we should, you know, we got to, you know, kind of dial back, you know, and ease up a little bit. But, you know, I don't know. What else do you want to hit on the Cardinals-wise? Is there anything else that we can touch on before we get to the ending?
You know, I almost want to say that, you know, that, you know, Matt Winter wrote an article today that kind of says, you know, thanking the Cubs. And I think I really align with that in the fact that the Cubs, what they did this year in beating the Pirates and beating the Cardinals in order to get to the NLCS, you know, I mean, whether it was, while it was a hurting thing, I think it's going to make baseball in the Central Division a very exciting thing. I think for the first time in a while, you're going to see the Cubs be a player. You're going to see the Cubs in the Cardinals games that have a little bit more fury to them. I think the Cubs kind of sent a wake-up call to the Central Division this year. So every time I think about, you know, what the Cubs did, even though that they got swept by the Mets, I mean, they had to get past the Pirates, and they had to get past the Cardinals in order to get there. And I think if I were fans, while it's scary to see a great Cubs team, I think it's going to make the Central Division a lot more fun to watch and a lot more exciting. And I think I am, like every fan, I'm waiting to see how Mo responds, because once again, Matt and I discussed, you know, Mo can stand pat or he can make a big move. I mean, you know, sometimes you want to have the guy in your lineup that knocks, that sends the first punch, that knocks the other pitcher out, instead of having the Cardinals have to respond to being knocked down early in the game. You have a knockout puncher in your lineup, and as we just mentioned, it's going to be hard to do that, but for some reason, I do want to see how Mo, I mean, this was the Cardinals. I mean, this was an early exit for the Cardinals. Was this their earliest exit since 2009?
Mm-hmm. Well, except for 2010 when they didn't actually go, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, for the past few years, the Cardinals, I mean, they've gotten an NLCS, they've gotten the World Series, they've won it, and the fact that they got beat this year, not only by just, you know, the Giants, or even if the Dodgers had gotten to them, or somehow another team, they got beat by the Cubs. And I think that's the thing that I think the Mozeliak and Matheny and DeWitt are all going to go, okay, that's kind of a message kind of being sent. I've said it before, people are like, no, it's not. Like, it kind of is. I mean, when you get beat by your own division and that team has to go through the Pirates and you to get to the NLCS, where they got swept, I mean, yeah, it may have been a little worse if the, you know, Cubs had gotten to the World Series, or maybe they made this series a little bit more interesting with the Mets. But I do think the wake-up call, while it hurts and it's bitter, I think it's a good thing for the division, and it's going to make Mo not just be on cruise control, not just wearing his Mo Nose shirt and being all confident that, okay, I still have control of this division. Because I think, well, the Cardinals are still, you know, the gatekeepers of the Central because of what they've done since, you know, 2000, the last 15 years. I think, you know, that gate's being kind of pushed a little bit, and I want to see how Mo reacts. I mean, yeah, you can re-sign Hayward, and that's great. That makes that trade a success. That solidifies your outfield for a while. And, you know, you have Biscotti, but I want to see what he does. And, you know, if he does go out and get a Price or a Zimmerman, if he does make a big deal, if maybe he shifts around the infield, maybe he does shuffle things up and he gets a third baseman or a first baseman. I want to see him react. And, you know, people, it's funny, if he did this, people would still find a way to complain about it, but not me. I want to see what he does. I'm really interested in Mo's reaction to this early playoff exit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that Mo is a guy that's going to go out and panic because the Cubs are good.
Well, it's not really panic. I just want to see how he reacts.
Right, and I do think, you know, they've got a plan. I don't know that the Cubs getting good deviates them too much from that plan, but it might give them a little bit more urgency to know that, you know, I mean, look, 100 wins barely did it this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's
you got to figure probably Milwaukee and Cincinnati are going to be better, but then again, the Pittsburgh didn't get any of their wins off of those guys. They always kept losing to them.
And Pittsburgh's going to lose. I mean, A.J. Burnett, I mean, Pittsburgh's a team I think they're going to fall to number three. I think this is going to eventually be – I mean, they're not going to fall bad, but, I mean, how much longer can Francisco Liriano do what he's doing? Mm-hmm. You got Garrett Cole. They have some prospects. They have a great bullpen. They have an offense that's kind of it's suspect. It's not really a big bopper lineup. But, I mean, I think the Cubs are going to be, you know, challenging them for that number two spot. But then again, this could be all kind of become kind of like a floater between these three teams in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty likely that two of these three are going to be in the postseason every year, just about, because probably one's going to win the division, one's going to be the wild card team. Now, you know, everybody seems to already be anointing the Cubs, you know, this huge dynasty. And, okay, there's a lot to be there. If you're a Cubs fan, there's a lot to like. But, you know, I remember when the Cubs were going to be this dynasty with this, you know, baseball-savvy president that they had, And, you know, they had Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood, and they had this great team, and they were going to just, this was it. And, you know, then they got within a few outs in 2003, and that's all they ever did. You know, we've seen the Nationals. You know, the Nationals, with that idea that they were always going to be there. They shut down Strasburg in 2012, because they're going to be there all the time. Well, they've made one other playoff, and I don't know if they won any. They didn't win a series there. They have not won a postseason series yet.
Yeah.
So just because the Cubs have young hitting and they have good good management, they've got all this pieces, doesn't always mean it's going to come together. You know, if Arrieta got hurt, if Schwarber, if they figure out, you know, not to throw, you know, some things at Schwarberg, you know, Chris Bryant continues to strike out at a huge rate. I mean, obviously he's got power to go with that, but, you know, there are possibilities to not see the Cubs be this dominant team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, Randy Carricker made a good point about, you know, the rotation isn't that deep. You know, John Lester has proven that he can't, maybe his best years are behind him. Jake Arrieta, I think he pointed out, won more than 10 games for the first time in his career. So, and those are good points. And I think the Cubs, they are going to have to get some more pitching. You know, their bullpen is getting better. And as far as, yeah, you're right. I mean, they have a lot of guys that can strike out. I mean, they have lethal bats in Schwarber, Bryant, Rizzo, and Soler, but they also strike out a lot. But I do think that this, for the first time in a long time, I think everybody kind of expected that the Cubs were maybe going to be a few years off, but now that they've kind of rushed to the front and at least are knocking on the door, it's definitely going to make the Central Division a very fun place.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I expect that the Cubs are going to be good for a while. I'm more than anything trying to give myself hope that they're not, because it's just not a world we need to live in where we're having to worry every year about whether this is the year that the Cubs win the World Series. It's just not a good thing. Yeah, and you're right. Pittsburgh is going to. I mean, they lose Burnett. They might lose J. A. Happ. Even if they don't, can J. A. Happ pitch like that all year long? Maybe the changes of the pitching coach made a difference, but part of me feels like he's going to come back to the pack somewhat. You know, they don't have, they still haven't figured out what to do with Pedro Alvarez. You know, that offense could use a little bit of a kick as well. Yeah, I can see that. And, you know, Milwaukee and Cincinnati still two or three years from probably being contention. I don't think you're going to see them be very good, but you know, it didn't take much to be a little bit better, and the difference between the top three teams could be what they do against those two teams, or beating up on others. So, you know, again, we got a lot of we got the whole off season still. You can't even get started until 5 days after the World Series gets done. Then we'll probably see some action, but there's a lot of questions, a lot of interesting things to go with it. Anything else before we get into our entertainment section?
You know, I can't. I think we covered all. I think we covered the need for offense. We covered a little bit of Mets and the playoffs. We covered the Cubs. We covered Hayward and, you know, possible trades. I mean, I think anything's going to be possible. But then again, as you just said, the World Series has to end. Free agency has to start. They have to officially fire up that engine. And as we know, Mo likes to strike quick. But I think, like you, I think he's going to dial it back and really work on getting Hayward signed and really look at his options. So, yeah, I think we covered it.
Yeah. Well, but winter meetings, December 7th through 10th in Nashville this year. So I think there's some maybe owners meetings or some sort of meetings in November.
Maybe
kind of set some groundwork. I don't remember exactly what that is, but get a little.
Maybe
bit
give our audience our kind of schedule where we're going to be bouncing around a little bit.
Yeah, pretty much. And I was going to definitely get to that before we were done. Pretty much starting now and until spring training, Dan and I will be coming to you pretty much every other week. We will do that schedule. You know, and if something breaks, you know, if there's a big deal, a big signing, something, we might do a small show in between. But
yeah, definitely.
For the most part, we're going to try to do every 2 weeks. I know in December, I think we're going to do back-to-back weeks and then have 3 weeks off, because the week that we were Dan wanted to try to schedule one of these for December 17th when I'm going to be watching Star Wars, and it wouldn't happen. So
it wouldn't happen. No. Yeah. Shop Talk's mind would be elsewhere other than baseball.
I have my tickets already. I am not going to be here. I'm going to be at the theater, and then afterwards, I'm probably not going to be worth.
That's a good transition for our movie section.
That's right. So why don't you go with that, and then I'll talk about the trailer.
I'll tell you what, I saw probably with the best movie I've seen this year, and that's Bridge of Spies. The new Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg film is about as good as you can expect. When these two guys hook up, you know, it's like the old days of Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan. These guys, they work so well together. They make great movies about, you know, world wars and all those, the American history and, you know, Saving Private Ryan. They produced Band of Brothers, and this film takes place in the Cold War, 1957. Tom Hanks is an insurance lawyer who basically has to go from helping people find insurance to helping two countries mortgage a trade. And it's one of those things where it's all about, you know, the Americans catch a spy, they catch a Russian spy, but then the Russians catch an American spy. And in order to mortgage, negotiate a swap, you know, it created all this tension. And Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks, if there's two guys you want tackling a history topic, it's these two guys, because they're both history buffs. Tom Hanks is great in the role. There's a guy named Mark Rylance, an actor who hasn't worked too much, who plays the Russian spy. And it's one of those very well-done, polished, meaningful movies that everybody can see. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of action. It barely has any language. It's a powerful yet light movie. It doesn't get too heavy. The whole family can really enjoy this. And it's one of those points in history where, you know, you had two countries that were sitting next to a button with, you know, that they could ignite nuclear weapons. And this is a very tense time. It really takes you back to a time in history where everything was kind of up for grabs. And potentially, you know, people, our histories and our futures could have changed with one bad decision. And it's just the one thing where, you know, the Americans caught this Russian spy and they thought they had an advantage. And, you know, and what Tom Hanks did, his character did, in order to keep him alive, and, you know, and especially it paid dividends when the Russians caught the American spy. And it was kind of a thing where, you know, it's one of the deals the American public did not find out about until it was already done. It is inspired mostly by a true story. I'm sure some names are changed, but people, even if you're not a movie fan, you should go out and see this movie. It's one of those things that kind of defies the cinema buffs, the people that the film addicts like myself. This movie is something that anybody could enjoy. It's not a hard story to digest. It's a great history lesson about the United States, you know, standing up for noble. Because really, when Tom Hanks is lawyer, you know, he's appointed to really defend this Russian spy, so that the United States can be seen giving this guy a fair trial. And here's a guy who's, you know, probably number two as far as on the hate list, to be here as defending a spy who could possibly be revealing secrets of the United States nuclear weapons to the Russians. And what happens over the course of this movie, it's very well done. And Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks, you'll be seeing this film in the Oscar season. It's really a must see. You've had, you know, The Martian, and you had Mississippi Grind, a gambling film with Ryan Reynolds. That was really well done. But then you also have Bridge of Spies, and it really solidifies that we are into the heavyweight season of films where, you know, all the blockbusters and the, you know, the light contenders get moved away and the really heavy hitters take center stage. Now, nothing is going to be more heavy hitting for both film fans and history of film fans than Star Wars. So, Mr. Shoptaw, tell people about the new trailer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that it sold $45 million worth of tickets and it's 2 months away. Should tell you something. I'm pretty sure that 95% of our audience has seen the trailer at least once, and the other 5% have already tuned out because they don't want to hear me talk about it. But it harkened back to the original trilogy in a significant way. You see Han Solo there telling you the stories are real, but you see a little bit more of the main characters. You get a little bit more feel for what's going to be happening. Now, there's a lot of questions still. Where's Luke Skywalker? You know, there's the idea that he's turned evil. We don't know that. I sincerely kind of hope not. But, you know, you've got this, you know, they released the poster, you see a new super weapon. And, you know, in all these trailers we have not seen R2-D2 or C-3PO, which we know are in the film. You know, you've just had a brief shot of Princess Leia. So much. In fact, I was reading someplace that the toys that came out, you know, back last month, all are from the first third of the film. There's a whole lot, the last half, two-thirds of this film. Really, there's not much out there about that. So, whatever we may think we know about it, there could be a lot more to it. It's going to be huge. It's going to be... I don't know how it could be bad. I'm sure there were a lot of people... a lot of people said that about Episode 1 as well. I get that. But I think from what we've seen and how J.J. Abrams is treating this... And, I mean, you know, the biggest thing with Episode 1 is nobody could tell George Lucas no. I think there's a different mindset, a different mentality that goes into this. So I'm very, you know, very excited to see what this is. Like I said, I've got my tickets about 10 minutes after the trailer went up as soon as I could. Going to go see it April or December 17th. Thankfully, it's got a 7 o'clock show, so I can take the boy as well, which is going to be fun to let him go to a Star Wars premiere for the first time. You know, and then we'll see it probably at least three or four more times before the end of the year, because, you know, you got to do that. So if it doesn't make $1 billion, it won't be because they didn't get my money.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a film that I'm not as crazy about as most people, but I do, I love the way that I'm, when I'm watching this trailer, I'm seeing the first three films. I'm getting that feel again. Mm-hmm. I love that they got the old gang back together and they add new faces like you know, Oscar Isaac playing one of the pilots and you know, Daisy. I know the actress that watched the trailer herself. It's great to add some new blood, and I love the fact that they brought back Harrison Ford. I don't care if he's not 99 years old. He's going to be great. You have to have Han Solo in this mission, and I love the fact that he just kind of has that great narration where it's true. Yeah, it's all of it. It's almost like telling the audience, like, it's true. We're really back. You know, this is not going to be as underwhelming as the other movies if people thought that. It's a rush of excitement that, I mean, it's like Bridge of Spies, really. It's kind of a movie that really can just... It can speak to any movie fan, especially a guy like me who, I mean, I grew up with these movies. I mean, I watched, you know, Return of the Jedi so many times, Empire Strikes Back. They had this on at the gym a couple months ago, and I ended up being at the gym for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I just kind of started watching Empire Strikes Back. I think I was meandering on a treadmill. You know, I think the treadmill kind of wanted me to get off. But it's one of those things where it's a movie that just kind of captures your attention no matter if you like it or not. Because there's a lot of movies out there that go, okay, that looks good, that looks bad. But Star Wars, especially since they brought back these main characters and that J.J. Abrams is doing it, I like that your point that this is not going to be like George Lucas going, I want this, I want that. This is a very accomplished director. I mean, this guy kind of rebooted the Star Trek series very well in a great way. He's done a lot of different movies. He's got a big resume that's full of great flicks and not a lot of misses. So if he was going to take on this big endeavor, you know he isn't going to mess it up. And the last trailer makes it look really, really good.
Yeah, and I think the new name, the new faces are going to be good. Nobody had seen Daisy Ridley before, or very little, and I think she's going to be huge, big in this movie for as Rey. I expect that's probably going to be the focus, kind of like Luke Skywalker was in the first. The original trilogy. I have a feeling she may be that focus, and whether she's tied to, you know, somebody as a you know, relative or what, we'll find out. But yeah, I think it's going to be quite exciting to see what they.
Yeah,
can
I do get that. I do get that vibe, especially when she's kind of going through that little sand with the little R2-D2 there, or the new one, I guess, the new
BB-8.
Yeah, BB-8. I mean, it reminded me of the earlier films where you see, you know, Luke Skywalker walk around with R2-D2, and it kind of makes me think that there is going to be, hopefully, that connection. I'm with you. I know Mark Hamill years ago spoke with J.J. Abrams in some interview mm-hmm. with Kevin Smith about, hey, it'd be cool if Luke went bad. Well, hey, the bands don't want that. So, I mean, I hope he's kind of tied to Rey, and that comes into play. Mentor to her, so that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, original the original rumors were this was going to be like Luke Skywalker is missing and they're going to have to go find him. You know, whether that, you know, again, that was way early on. That could easily be wrong, but that would be also explain some things that perhaps they're trying to find him. They won't feel close to the end of the movie, but I think he signed on for episode 8 as well. So one way or another, we'll see some more of Luke Skywalker. But still less, just a little less than 2 months now until that comes out, and that should be the final trailer. Should not. You know, so we'll see some commercials, we'll see some newer stuff, but for the most part, that's what you get. And for once, you're not going to be, you know, it really seems like you're going to go to a movie not knowing what's going to happen. And that's not always, you know, that's not always the case when they put out trailers. A lot of people can know 75-80% of the movie even before they go in there.
I mean, yeah, for example, when I went and watched The Martian, having read the book, I know what happens in the end. Bridge of Spies, you pretty much know what's going to happen in the end. A lot of movies you do, but in this case, where you're taking some very honored and treasured material and you're putting your own spin on it, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. A lot of 90% of movies, you pretty much know what's probably going to happen by the end of the movie. But then there's that great 10% where you go in there and go, okay, I think this is going to happen, but I really have no idea.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Have you watched?
I think,
you got your TV shows. You got anything else entertainment wise before we head out?
I just finished up Edward Burns' Public Morals on TNT. A great show. If you have UVerse, you have On Demand. You can watch all 10 episodes. It's a really good 1960s New York cop show. It's great. You know, it's very well done. Great cast. I'm watching my mixed martial arts boxing show Kingdom on DirecTV, but also it's on UVerse because they had a little connection there. They finally hooked up Frank Grillo, one of my favorite kind of unknown actors, is the star of it. It's about this family of fighters, and it's about as much outside of the ring as it is inside the ring. So that's kind of my crush right now. Well, what are you watching?
You know, this week has been a busy week, so all my shows are piling up. You know,
that's a good day, though.
Yeah.
That's a good, like, weekend. You know, when the kids go to bed, you can kind of just watch, like, three in a row.
Well, that's the good thing about, you know, my work schedule right now is I don't have to work tomorrow, so good chance we'll try to maybe knock one out tonight. But, you know, Rebels is on, which is fun. Star Wars Rebels, still enjoying it. Watched it this afternoon, actually, with the boy, and you got all the other shows. Supergirl starts next week. Looking forward to that. Elementary will be back on in a couple weeks. I've always enjoyed the Sherlock Holmes. I don't know if it's kind of an interesting show. It was on last year on TNT. Maybe you saw it. It was The Librarians.
Yeah.
Came out.
I saw a lot of I saw ads for that during Edward Burns' Public Morals.
Yep,
It looks interesting.
It's a good show. It was on last year. It's, of course, based on there are about three Librarians movies that had Noah Wiley in them. The idea that the Librarians, if you ever saw Warehouse 13, it has a similar type of thing. They go get artifacts, huge things that have, you know, power, have magic, King Arthur's sword, you know, legendary things, and they're the ones in charge of them. And in the show, they've trained some new ones. They had a season last year that they were training some new librarian helpers, if you will. So that starts back up a week from Sunday, and it's a fun show. It's not too serious. It's pretty funny. You know, it's got its moments, but we've enjoyed that last year. Looking forward to that returning as well. So, you know, it just seems like, you know, about the time, it does not take long before I start getting farther and farther behind. So, you know, you do have to set some time aside and try to get some of these shows watched, because
now that the Cardinals aren't sucking up three hours a night, you got some time.
That does help a lot, you know. If I'm take care of not having to watch anything there, that does help. But anyway, well, for Dan, I'm Daniel. Like we said, we'll be back with you in a couple of weeks. It should be the end of the World Series by the time we're back on the air, and so, you know, we'll probably maybe see a little bit of what's going on. If it's been a short World Series, maybe it'd be that 5-day period where things are starting to, people are starting to file and things are starting to happen. So until then, have a good one.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dans in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82. Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is BestDan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.